Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off. Hey, welcome to the Dropship Podcast. Hey, John, I've got a question for you that comes from our audience. How do you know if you chose a bad niche?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I've certainly seen this one come up. Look, I'm interested to get into this. I'd love to hear your take on this. I think I might know kind of what it is, but I think there's even a question. I kind of. For a discussion would bring this back to another question, which is there such thing as a bad niche? Because would you say no? I would kind of expect Ben to say, truly no, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, do you think there is such a thing as a, like, would you call something a bad niche?
I'm going to try to sound really smart when I answer this. It depends on which, on the fulcrum by which we are weighing results or some shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it really depends what your metric is. So, like,
yeah,
to somebody who wants to make $100,000 a month profit, in which you need a, you know, a big business, right? $1 million a month in sales, a business that is a side hustle, which we talked about in recent podcasts, mm-hmm. where you're making a couple thousand a month, that might be a failure to them. That might be a bad niche to them. Where other people, that might be everything they've been looking for. And so I do think you can make anything work, but it might not work the way you want it to work. So it depends on what your goals are. But I do think all of them could work. So even the bad ones, right? We've talked about some bad ones on here before. E-bikes. I think you threw saunas in the fire at one point. Standing desk was certainly one I was part of. I would not recommend to people. But, like, is that a bad niche? It depends on your criteria, I think.
Yeah, that's very true. And I have this, you know, over at Dropship Breakthrough. I see all of the niche ideas that people have that they want to do. Like, they send them into us. We have a niche verification service for our members there where we check people's niches and make sure they're on the right track. And so, you know, I see all of those and all of the things that people are thinking of doing. And, you know, there's a lot of times where, like, somebody sends me an idea and they're like, this is something I'm really passionate about, or I have experience in this area. And I look at it and I go, yeah, I don't really know that that's a great idea, but they're like, I'm really into it. I'm happy to do the work and all of that sort of thing. Cause this is something I think I can make a difference in. And I'm like, you know what? Okay. You know, for you, that's probably okay. But for somebody else, it might not be. Do you know what I mean? And so I think my answer to it isn't necessarily, I mean, maybe there's a list of, like, a short list of some niches where we just know that there's a particular factor, and we'll get to what those might be, that just make it not really viable, right?
I think to your last point, like, we have a partner like that, what you mentioned in the first, like, someone who's like, maybe we wouldn't recommend this industry to everyone, but for this person, it makes an absolute ton of sense. Yeah. And you showed me their About Us page, and I went, oh, okay, I get it now. Like, I totally understand that. And so I do think you're right in that sense. And that probably is more the case than you think. And this might go back to where I always talk about the passion side of it. You know what I mean? If someone's, like, deeply passionate about something, or they live inside that industry, that might make sense way more for them than it ever does on a broad scale.
And so my advice to, like, what I say to people in that scenario where they have an idea where they're like, where I think I'm like, man, I wouldn't do that. But they're like telling me, like, I've got a direct experience with these products. I was employed in this industry. I understand it really deeply. And I'm like, well, I don't, but you do. You've got an advantage there. What I say to them is like, what you need to be aware of is that on the difficulty scale, this one's going to be a bit harder because of, and you need to be aware of this because of X, X, and X, right? But in your favor, it's something you've got a deep interest in or a deep experience in, and so that's going to give you a bit of an advantage as well. You know, and occasionally there's somewhere I say to people, no, that just doesn't work at the moment. But I truly, there's not many like bad niches. Like a bad niche to me is one that I would say to somebody, no, under no circumstances do that right now. Right, because I just know that you're not going to get there, you know. And so, like, if we talk about an example of high ticket products that might fall into that, that I would probably say no to. It's going to be like, I think consumer electronics is a good example. Like white goods, don't drop ship those. Why? And this is one of the first instances where you're going to know if there's a potential issue with the niche you've chosen, is the supplier side of things. Like, you're not going to get good suppliers in that space dropshipping from you. Like, the brand is not going to dropship for you. They're just not. You're going to strike out. At best, you might get a supply agreement with a distributor at 10% or less margins. Like, to me, that classifies as a bad niche, right? And so I think that's the first point where people might know they're striking out with an idea, you know, once again, is when you get to the point of calling suppliers, you start making those calls and you're hitting constant objections and no's. Yes, you've got to take some time to deal with those things, I think, and there's a process to go through. Like, sometimes a no isn't really a no and all of that sort of stuff, and you can work past that with suppliers. But occasionally I hear of people like, oh, I had a list of 20 suppliers and I called them all and I followed them up and I've been doing that for a month, but I'm not getting any yeses. You know, that's probably a good indication that at that particular point in time, that niche idea is not one that's going to work for you, right? And so jump back a step, pick another niche, redo your website a little bit. It'll take you a few days to do this, and then go again. New supplier list, have another go.
It's interesting that you picked that as your first choice. Like, probably the right way to go through this is like, okay, if you get to this step and you see this, then go back. If you get to this step and you see this, then go. Like, I kind of like the way you started there. I wouldn't have thought of that one. Like, just simply determining based on suppliers again, because like you said, it's so subjective, right? There are some people who just send off 10 emails and get no answers on those 10 emails. And they're like, oh, I tried every supplier in the industry. It doesn't work. And you're, well, no, we told you to call them. And also, like, you sent 10 emails, right? Like, that's not the end all be all here. So that's hard to say. Like, hopefully everybody watching this or listening to this is like understanding the nuance here. There's going to be nuance. Did you do all the work? Did you go as hard as you could in each one of these things that we kind of mentioned here? Cause, you hit one right out of the gates calling suppliers, but you're right. If you don't get the brands, they defer you to distributors constantly. And man, that 10% hits home, John. That is what happens in some of those industries. I know we sold projectors at one of the businesses as part of a bundle. That's how it started, right? We got sent to a distributor who sold every projector in on the planet, and we got crap margins. Eventually, we ordered so many, we got decent margins, but it wasn't fun in the beginning at all.
Yep. And so to me, that's my first big indicator that a market. And to me, if I think about past that point of contacting suppliers, let's say you went through that phase and you got suppliers and that was all good. You got decent margins, the sort of margins that we look for. Past that, and so you're able to put products on your site, launch it. Past that, I don't think there's a bad niche, like, or there's a wrong niche, right? The next bit I would say is like competition can be a good indicator that, I mean, this can be an indicator that a market is going to be more difficult than another one. Right? Or a niche, when you're comparing niche ideas, one with really high competition is obviously or potentially going to be more difficult than one with a lower level of competition, all other things being considered equal. But even then, like, sometimes that just means you need to do things differently. It doesn't mean that it's not going to work. So even then, I would still say, really, it's a heavily depends answer. Like, and if you get to that point where you've got good brands, you've got good margins, and you know it comes down to the marketing side of things, there's so much to try and do there that it would take some time for me personally to say, oh, look, no, this one's just not going to work. I've got to pull the pin on this. Do you know what I mean? And so
competition is an interesting one because you should have found that during your research.
Should have found that. You should have found that at the start. That's right. I'm not so much at that point thinking about people who are going like through our course who get that information. I know there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast that aren't in our course yet. You should be, but you're not yet. And so maybe you're missing the importance of this in your initial niche selection. But you're absolutely right. If you did the selection process right, you should have picked up on what level of competition there is in the things you're thinking about, and you should have made that decision with that as a factor. But assuming you didn't do that, then that would definitely be probably the next point where I'd say, where I'd be looking at and saying, oh, you know, this is going to be a tough one.
I have a site I mess around on in a very competitive industry that I'm curious, you know, what would be your take? Is that a bad, you know, I know you know what I'm talking about. We only sell one line of products there, and ads are $7 to $14 a click. And like, it's banana. It's so, so competitive. Margins are great. So then everyone offers discounts. You cannot make a sale if you don't offer a discount. Like, literally, you will not make a sale if you don't offer a discount. And so like, you're paying enormous amounts cost per click, which almost makes advertising untenable. And then you have to give these big discounts in order to make sales. And so you're driving this traffic, hopefully organically or whatever. The site makes a grand or two a month on average, right? Some months it lose a grand. Is that a bad niche? You know what I mean? Like, this is where I'm trying to say, like, I don't know where to draw the line here. Because there's some people who'd be like, oh, that's cool. You know, makes $1,000 a month. I'd like to make $1,000 a month. And that might be thrilling for somebody. It's in an industry that's very competitive. It's going to take a lot of work to scale inside of that industry. But it's not working, right? And so I just don't know where to draw the line of good niche. How do you know if you chose a bad niche? Because I think a lot of people asking this question have got suppliers, have uploaded products, have ran ads, and now they've spent whatever they consider a significant amount of money on ads, and they're not making sales. And so then they're trying to blame the industry rather than perhaps, hey, my ads aren't right, or my website isn't right, or I'm missing something on the product pages here, or my offer isn't right, as you often talk about, right? And like, to me, I bet the majority of people asking this question fall into that camp versus fall into a camp where they genuinely chose something they shouldn't be in.
Yep. And in your example, I mean, effectively at this point, you know, if you're kind of primarily pushing one category of product or one product type, you know, you got a few brands of that one product type. I mean, you shouldn't be doing that anyway, either. Like,
right.
Single product category stores we've talked about on this podcast before are not the the ideal way of doing high ticket dropshipping. So to me, it would be, okay, cool. So in that particular example, if that's the definition of your niche, is that single product category, maybe you need to change that a little bit. Keep those products, keep selling them, but add some other stuff in alongside it, right? You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be some other product categories potentially out there in the world that make sense to sell alongside those, and you know, maybe that could be a completely different experience. But you could keep getting your $1,000 a month, you know, whatever, like profit or whatever you're getting on those products, and then add two or three other product categories on next to that, which maybe they contribute $3,000 or $4,000 a month in profit, and you put all that together, and now you're at $10,000 a month profit or more. Do you know what I mean? And that starts to look a lot better. Not to mention, for some of those people who buy the original product category you're in, maybe now they want to buy some of those other ones as well. Maybe sure. You can set up bundles, sell three or four products together. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I say. Like, sometimes the answer is not that necessarily that your niche is bad, because the niche should really be the customer, not the product, right? Sometimes you just need to re-visualize what your niche is. Sometimes that means expanding it a little bit. Sometimes it means going sideways a little bit into a related set of products than the one you first started in. Because there is an element of, you know, in the beginning, when you're doing your research into niches, you can only know so much about the niche, right? I mean, yes, you do research. We look at competition. We look at traffic. We look at what products there are. We look at what suppliers there are, all of that sort of stuff. But you have, once you've gone into it and you've started doing it and you've started interacting with customers and you're getting some traffic, you get a way deeper level of insight into that niche than you did at the beginning. And you start to see oftentimes opportunities to do other things that are related to where you started, but they're not exactly the same thing. And sometimes where you start isn't exactly right, and you learn that, but then you also see opportunities to move sideways a little bit. And I've seen a lot of people where that was where they became more successful. You know, they had that shot in the beginning and they got close, but they didn't get it quite right. And then they just needed to change a few things in terms of what their niche was, who they were serving, what product categories they were selling. And when they did that, they started to hit much better numbers. And so once again, it can be hard to see that as well. And I think once again, this is a really good example of why it's important to have a mentor here if you can, or coaching, or someone you're learning from that knows what they're talking about, that you can actually get more direct feedback from. Because if you're new to drop shipping, you're like, you really want to make it work, you've chosen a niche, you've done all this sort of thing, and for some reason it's just not quite coming together for you at some point of that journey, like, honestly, your ability to work out why that is and what you should do about it is pretty low, because you just don't have the experience at that point. It's not your fault, but it's not a criticism, but you just don't know what you don't know. Whereas somebody who's more experienced oftentimes can look at what you're doing and say, hey, did you know that if you just did this, this, and this, that would probably make a big difference? Or have you thought about selling this, this, or this? Or who's your ideal customer? Okay, so what about this, this, and this? Do you know what I mean? And somebody who's been in the game for a while can usually pick up on those things just really quickly. Like, you know, if you or I look at somebody's website, usually we see things or think about things that maybe they're not seeing, if they're at the, you know, obviously somebody who's a bit very early in the process. So
when you do a website teardown, or I do an SEO teardown, or Google Ads teardown, all of which are coming in the next few episodes here for a site, that's where you can get that feedback. So kudos to all the people who have volunteered so far for these things. The other place you can get those is in a community, right? Inside of our elite membership is a place where you can get on a call with John and I and have us look at this stuff and literally, you know, walk you through it, as well as see other people's examples. And, you know, just a little teaser, I think, I don't know when this is coming out, John, but John and I are bringing back the Patreon, and we're going to bring back a YouTube membership, or bring forth a YouTube membership to go with that. So whether you prefer watching John and I on video go much, much deeper than we do on these podcasts, or whether you miss the old Patreons, you prefer the podcast feed and you want to hear John and I talk about some stuff, it's coming back. And so, you know, head to our YouTube, click the join if it's there, head to patreon.com/dropshipbreakthrough if you want to sign up. Make sure you sign up as a paid member, not a freed member, because we're not doing any of the free stuff over there. It's $5 an episode. I'm sure YouTube will be something like that. Look for that in the next few weeks. So that's where we're going to do more of this teardown stuff. This is where I would hope people want to come there and you know, not have to expose themselves to this giant free feed of listeners, but, you know, come to a tight community, get genuine feedback from someone like you and me. Because you're right, John. They're, like, I can hop in a store often in ads, and I bet you could do the same thing. You hop in ads and you go, why are you doing this? And then it's like a slight change, rearrange your keywords, and magically the ads start working a whole lot better than they did a little bit ago. And like, that could be the big, big difference in somebody's business that they just don't see, or a little tweak on their website that they have no idea that it's not working the way it should. And you and I see it right away. We've been doing this for 10 years each. Like, it just comes a little more natural to us. We've got a lot of people in our community that I think can offer some similar advice too. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't started, fucking start, so that you can have these problems, so that we can solve them. But number two, if you're at that point, if you're like, man, I've been trying, it's not working, you know, reach out so that John or myself or our community can help.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business.
John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business, not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts, to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for the Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image, and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out the Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.